The Leaven and the Lump.
The theme text for our convention is 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, and the 7th verse. Purge out, therefore, the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened, for even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. This is one of the basic texts we always read this time of the year, one we meditate upon, and one I'm sure we each try to apply. In our study today, we're going to look at six areas. We're going to look first at the natural effects of leaven and what it does. Secondly, we're going to look at leaven as treated in the Old Testament. Third, we're going to look at the parable of the leaven in the New Testament. Fourth, we're going to look at, I think it's six types of spiritual leaven that are specifically mentioned in the New Testament. Then we're going to look at what unleavened bread means in its spiritual significance. And finally, practical lessons from each of these. Leaven itself, we basically think of as yeast. Yeast is a one-celled fungus that converts sugar and starch into carbon dioxide bubbles and alcohol. This has made it a useful ally in the production of bread. There are many varieties of yeast. Bread is made with baker's yeast, which creates lots of bubbles. And they become trapped in the dough, making the bread rise so it's light and airy when baked. A small amount of alcohol is also produced, but that burns off as the bread breaks. You should never eat raw, active yeast. It will continue to grow in your intestine and rob your body of valuable nutrients. From this very brief description, and for those who want to look further at it, there's a very interesting webpage on the Fleischmann's yeast, on the history of leaven, going back to the origins of the use of leaven, found very fascinating. But we find from this brief introduction that one, leaven adds no nutrients itself to the product. All it does really is add fluffiness, lightness, and therefore it's considered an accent because it makes it more flavorful, but it doesn't make it better. Third, that eaten raw, it will grow in the intestines, and instead of adding nutrients, it will actually rob the body of nutrients. All of these are very good pictures of the effects of sin in our life. And that basically is what leaven pictures. It pictures the effects of sin, particularly in the side effect of puffiness or pride. Pride is a particular manifestation of the outworking of spiritual leaven in our lives. In the Old Testament, we find that leaven was to be removed from the house completely before Passover, showing that the Passover picture was to be observed in a totally pure, completely clean condition, that any leaven, spiritually any sin, was to be as far as possible taken. They actually swept carefully the house. They went into the corners to be sure there was no leavening agent that may be there. They couldn't completely remove leaven because leaven even appears naturally in the air and can come from just the air being in the room. But all leaven that they could, they were to remove. Leaven was also not to be used in the meal offerings of Israel. There was a specific ban on using leavening of any type in meal offerings. But contrary-wise, it was to be used in thank offerings. There, leaven was a specified ingredient. It was to be used in the offering on the day of Pentecost. So we find a little dichotomy here. There were some places leaven was not to be used, other places it was to be used. And finally, in this section, we'll look at a prophecy regarding leaven in the book of Amos. Leaven was to be removed before Passover. Ezekiel 13:7. He's in the back row. Exodus 13:7. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and there shall no leavened bread be seen with thee, neither shall there be any leaven seen with thee in thy quarters. This is the picture that Paul is drawing on in Corinthians, that as they were to remove leaven, so we are to remove all the effects of sin that we can find in our lives. Now that's difficult. If you can do it, I would appreciate you telling me how you did it, because I can't. But we're to remove what we can. We're to look inwardly, to examine ourselves, to see whether we are really living in the faith, not only believing the faith. We are to examine ourselves for evil tendencies. We are to examine ourselves for actions or words that may be dishonoring to the Father. I particularly appreciated Brother Ray Luke's talk this morning, in which the emphasis was on using this season and all seasons to glorify God. Leaven does not glorify God. And therefore we can glorify Him in one way by looking carefully and seeing that we try to remove this leaven. Leaven was also not to be used in the meal offerings. Leviticus 2:11-13. No meat, or really should be meal, no meal offering which you shall bring unto the Lord shall be made with leaven. For you shall burn no leaven, nor any honey, in any offering made by fire. As for the oblation of the first fruits, you shall offer them unto the Lord, but they shall not be burned on the altar for a sweet savor. And every oblation of thy meal offering shall thou season with salt. Neither shalt thou suffer the salt of the covenant of thy God to be lacking from thy meal offerings. With all thy offerings thou shalt offer salt. In the meal offering, therefore, there were two ingredients forbidden, leaven and honey, and one ingredient required, salt. Let's look at that very briefly as to why there was no honey. Because if we look at the no honey, I think we also get a better feeling for leaven. Honey is leaven. It's a leavening agent. The Rabbi Abraham Sutton, in his Spiritual Significance of the Ketorah, wrote, "Honey, if cooked on fire, bubbles and rises more than any other liquid. More than any other quality, puffed up pride prevents a person from recognizing his or her faults." That's a jewel of a statement. Pride obstructs spiritual vision. Where there is pride, and who of us can not say we don't have some, where there is pride, we fail to see the fault, because we are more interested in our own well-being, our feeling of need, our feeling of being a complete person. That's part of pride. There is a proper estimation of self, but pride is one that is taken to the next level. It exalts self above what is truly there. It is true, in fact, that we are to reckon ourselves as ciphers, as zeros. That can be carried too far. We can be so lacking in any feeling of self-worth, and some are, that they are paralyzed and they do nothing. But it is not self that has the worth. It's what the Lord adds to that. And therefore, He says, take this feeling of self, take this puffed-up pride that honey provides, as it, like leaven, brings the bubbles into the bread, and remove that. Brother Russell, in an early article, says, "Honey was forbidden to teach us that whatever is sweet to nature must be disowned. If it's something that we, by the human nature, want, And we realize that as consecrated Christians, we have given up the human nature. Then, like honey, like leaven, we must get rid of it. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do anything you like. There are things that you should like, you can do. What we need to do is train our likes. Channel our likes to those things that God likes. And if we like what God likes, then that is not alien to our new nature, although it may be alien to the old nature. That which is sweet to the old nature is that which must be disowned as the honey. But salt. Salt was not acting here as a leavening agent. It was a flavoring agent. But the point is not the flavor that the salt puts into it. I like salt, and that's a feeling I have. Salt is not good for a person with heart conditions. But salt is also, and especially in Old Testament times, the best preservative they had. And so in the meal offering, this should be a permanent offering, a preserved offering, one that is offered with salt, but not with self. However, there was to be leaven in the thank offerings. Leviticus 7, 12, and 13. If he offered for a thanksgiving, then she shall offer with the sacrifice of thanksgiving unleavened cakes mixed with oil, and unleavened wafers anointed with oil, and cakes mingled with oil of fine flour. But beside these cakes, he shall offer for his offering leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace offerings. And the question may be asked, why would God say no leaven with meal offerings, but add leaven to one of the offerings with the thanksgiving offering? Well, two of them were to be unleavened, but one was to be leavened. The meal offering is the accompanying offering to the sin offerings, to the sacrifices that related to atonement in one fashion or another. There, God looks not at our actions, but our intentions. And there we should come with the purest of intentions, unleavened bread. But in our thank offerings, we recognize, among other things, that we do have sin, that we are fallen. And he says, with this, offer that recognition. Give leavened bread so that here you're presenting yourself as you are, where the meal offering, you're presenting yourself as you want to be. Here you're presenting yourself as a appreciation for being drawn from the mire of sin. And so you recognize that the sin was there. In the meal offering, you're presenting yourself as a new creature, holy before the Lord. Similarly, at Pentecost, there were to be two loaves offered with leaven. Ezekiel 23:16-17. Even unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath shall you number 50 days, and you shall offer a new meat offering unto the Lord. You shall bring out of your habitation two wave loaves of 2 tenth eels, and they shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are first fruits unto the Lord. In the spring of Israel, in the springtime in Israel, there were two festivals, the Passover and Pentecost. On the third day after the Passover, the 16th of Nisan, there was the waving of a barley sheaf. At Pentecost, the wheat harvest had come in, and there was the offering of these two leavened loaves. Passover pictures Christ. Pentecost, just like the day of Pentecost, pictures the church, that which is the following offering. Barley was used in the Passover. Wheat was used at Pentecost. Because we are sinful, because we do have sin in our nature, we have to offer what we have, and that are the two loaves representing the church in the great company, which we'll see in the next quotation from Brother Russell, that are there on the day of Pentecost. Reprint page 5191. The two loaves represented the same thing as the two goats presented on the Day of Atonement. The two classes of the consecrated, the overcoming little flock and the great company of the consecrated servants of God who did not make the high calling theirs, but overcoming the world as they might and should do. It is as though both classes present themselves to the Lord, as the hymn puts it, just as I am. But the one in their life purifies themselves gradually of leaven. The other, at best, purifies themselves but little of the leaven. But both have leaven, and therefore leaven was offered in the wave offering of the day of Pentecost. Let's look briefly at the prophecy in Amos, and it's a short one. It ties in very much with the thank offerings. It's a prophecy the Lord speaks in sarcasm. Come to Bethel and transgress. At Gilgal, multiply transgression. And bring your sacrifice every morning and your tithes every 3 years, after 3 years. And offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving with leaven. And proclaim and publish the free offerings. For this you like, O you children of Israel, saith the Lord God. It reminds me of that Pharisee who read his clothes, like you see here, and said, thank God I'm not a sinner. I presented my sacrifices. He said, you, by offering these sacrifices, without first cleansing your hearts, are offering emptiness. He despises that offering. We can come through with all the formulations, with all the outward form of sacrifice. We can go to meeting 3 times a week. We can sit and sing and praise the Lord. But if the leaven is still in our heart, if we are Sunday go to meeting Bible students, if our religion means only to us an outward form or intellectual observance, is empty. It's leaven. He said, go and sacrifice that. In effect, what he's saying in the book of Amos, go and sacrifice. I don't care. I'm not going to accept it. The King David, when he had sinned with Uriah and Bathsheba, and recognizes his sin, and offers that beautiful psalm of Psalm 51, of repentance, he expresses a thought toward the end that burnt offerings you would not accept. The sacrifices of God are a clean heart. Then you can offer bullocks upon his altar. It's only if the first action takes place inside that the outside becomes meaningful. Time is going on. Let's progress to the New Testament. The parable of the leaven. Matthew 13:33. Another parable speaking unto them, the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. I want to focus on just one little tiny aspect of this parable. 3 measures of meal. Why didn't he just say he put in a loaf of bread? Why does he tell us the number of measures of meal? Is there any significance to the lump into which he places, and why the 3 measures? And I would suggest there is. Going back to the Old Testament, in Numbers 15:9, we read that when they offered a bullock, you'll bring a bullock, a meal offering of 3 10-thials of flour mingled with half an hin of oil. Numbers 15 is a catalog of the various offerings Israel was to give. And in this catalog, he gives the accompanying offerings, those side offerings that accompany the animal. And he said, if you give a free will offering, you give 1 10-thial of meal. Numbers 15:4. If you give a lamb, you give 2 10-thials of meal. Numbers 15:6. If you give a bullock, you give 3/10 of deals a meal. Numbers 15:9. The amount of meal was specifically related to the type of sacrifice. The bullock was the one that got 3/10 a meal. So it suggests that putting in three measures of meal in the parable, so you put it into your meal offering for the bullock. The bullock was recognized as the epitome of sacrificial animals in Israel. It was the animal that represented the Lord on the Day of Atonement. It was the animal that they could give other offerings where they had an option if they had a bullock to give. They were to give the best they had. So it is really the accompaniment of a perfect offering. And that's what the church's sacrifice has been throughout the age. An accompanying sacrifice to the bullock of the Day of Atonement, to our Lord Jesus. We see the same concept in 1 Samuel 1:24. And when Hannah had weaned Samuel, she took him up with her with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine and brought him into the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. Notice here that she brought three bullocks, and she didn't bring 3/10 deals. She brought an ephah of flour for the meal offering. John Wesley writes, "Flour for the meal offerings belonged to the principal sacrifices, which each bullock was 3/10, or 3 parts of an ephah. And so 9 parts of an ephah were spent. And the 10th part, the tithe, was given to the priest." Same formula. A bullock, 3/10 a meal. We have the same relationship. Look at again Revelation. 6th chapter, 6th verse. "And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts saying, 'A measure of wheat for a penny, and 3 measures of barley for a penny, and see thou hurt not the oil and the wine.'" Here again we have a mathematical ratio. Wheat, one deal. Barley, 3 deals. Wheat and barley. The barley was offered at Passover. It represented Jesus. The wheat was offered at Pentecost. It represented the church. Once again, the 3 relates to the perfect offering, the accompanying offering to Jesus. And so throughout the age, there was to be an offering of the church to accompany the perfect offering of Christ. And that offering was to be accompanied by 3 measures of meal. Unfortunately, the woman, the false church, put into that meal leavening. And pride began to erupt in various forms. And this pride was the leaven that needed to be weaned, cleaned, swept out of the house, totally removed. That, brethren, is our job today. It should be our job every day of our lives, but particularly the next 2 days. As we approach the memorial, we should approach with unleavened bread. But what is the leaven that is put in? In the New Testament, there are various kinds of leaven that are mentioned. There's the leaven of the Pharisees. There's the leaven of the Sadducees. There's the leaven of Herod. There's old leaven. There's leaven of malice. There's leaven of wickedness. I want to look briefly at the end of our message of these 6 types of spiritual leaven. 6 areas we are supposed to, especially to be eager in cleaning out the old leaven. Luke 12:1. "In the meantime, when they were gathered together, an innumerable multitude of the people, insomuch that they trode one upon another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, 'Beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy.'" That leaven he identifies. It's hypocrisy. The word hypocrite, hypocrisy, began by meaning someone who answers, and hypocrisy originally meant answering. First, the words were used in the ordinary flow of question and answered any talk or any dialogue. Then they began to be connected with the answer and question in a play. From that, they went on to be connected with the acting part. The hypocrite is never genuine. He's always play-acting. He's playing a part. The basis of Christianity, basis of hypocrisy, is insincerity. God would rather have a blunt, honest sinner than someone who puts on an act of goodness. Brethren, are we playing Bible students? Or are we being Bible students? Are we playing to be Christians? Or are we being Christians? This is where we need to root out this error. Often the leaven of the Pharisees is described as doctrinal error. And that's correct. But that's only part. That's a small part. It's the hypocrisy that error can lead to. The hypocrisy of putting on a mask. And like these little characters at the top, moving our lips and moving our eyes and moving our faces, but not moving our hearts. Then it's hypocrisy. The leaven of the Sadducees, Matthew 16:11-12. How is it that you do not understand that I speak to you concerning bread, that you should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees? Then understand they how, that he bade them not beware of the leaven of bread, but the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Pharisee doctrine was basically, we are the righteous ones. Putting it in a 20th century context, 21st century context, we have the truth. Do we live the truth? That's the question we must ask. Otherwise, it's hypocrisy. Leaven of the Sadducees is a little different. The Pharisee tendency was to mix error with truth. The Sadducee tendency was to take all validity out of truth, to deny sound truth, to deny the reality of truth. Putting that into a 20th century context, the doctrine of existentialism, that truth is determined by my life, what makes me feel good, what relates to today, and not basing itself upon the one eternal principle that is enumerated in Proverbs and Psalms. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The recognition of an authority figure in God and the honoring of that authority figure and trying to find what his truth is. The leaven of Herod, Mark 8:15. And he charged them saying, take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Herod was not religious. The leaven of Herod was not particularly religious leaven. It was political activism. The leaven of the state rather than the leaven of the church. And you might say, well, that certainly does not affect us. We keep ourselves totally removed from the state. But you know, as I've talked over the years with brethren and myself, looking inward, my own emotions, there are certain political issues in which we can become very emotionally involved. Abortion. The rights of homosexuality and gay rights. These are things we have very strong opinions on. But we're not to become political activists. We are to recognize that while we may take a personal position on these matters, the time for their correction is in the kingdom. 1 Corinthians 5:16. Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? Purge out the leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you were unleavened. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. The old leaven, that has two levels of meaning. In the context, it meant primarily the purging of sinners from the midst. Verse 13 says, put away from yourselves that wicked person. It's talking about the context of a man who was committing incest. But in a very real sense in our lives, it's more than that. It's purging of sin itself, not just of sinners. Brother Magnuson phrased it this way. We are to purge out the last remaining influences of our characters. Put away all the sinful desires and habits and thoughts of the old nature which are corrupt. That which we were by Adamic inheritance. These are described further in Ephesians 4, 22-24. Put off concerning the former conversation, the old man, which is corrupt according to deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. This leaven is further delineated in Colossians 3, 5-9. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth. Then he enumerates what that means. He mentions five things: fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness. And then he says that is idolatry. For which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience, in which also ye walked some time when ye lived in them. But now put off all these, and he lists five more things: anger, wrath, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth, lie not one to another, seeing that you put off the old man with his deeds. There are 10 kinds of old malice: fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, concupiscence. We don't use that word much, so I'll give you a dirty four-letter word: lust, and covetousness, which is idolatry. These relate to the mind. These are selfish desires. These relate to that which leads to action. But then in the 8th verse, he talks about the sins of emotions and the tongue: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication, lying that one to another. I'd like to look at these in a little more detail. C.F.D. Buell put them together in a very nice phrase. The Christian must kill self-centeredness and regard as dead all private desires and ambitions. There must be in his life a radical transformation of the will, a radical shift to the center. Everything which would keep him from fully obeying God and fully surrendering to Christ must be surgically excised. Idolatry is an attempt to use God for man's purposes, rather than to give oneself to God's service. Another writer put it this way: the man whose life is dominated by the desire to get things has set up things in place of God, and that precisely is idolatry. So the sins of temper, he mentions, were anger, wrath, and malice. Anger is the nurturing of resentment. It's the beginning of wrath. It's when you begin to harbor bad feelings against another. Wrath is when you let that inward building up of the anger burst out into temper. And malice is when you begin to plan the revenge. There are three successive stages of the temper sin. Then he gives the sins of the tongue: blasphemy, filthy communication, which he says is lie and lying not. That's what filthy communication is. Blasphemy is when you speak against God. Filthy communication when you speak against fellow men. And lying not is when you speak against the truth. These become the antidotes and the opposites that we must develop in putting out the leaven and replacing it with purity. There are three basic rules of Christian speech. Barclay says blasphemia is insulting and slanderous speaking in general. When that insulting speech is directed against God, it becomes blasphemy. The leaven was blasphemy, filthy communication, lying not. The antidote for blasphemy is a Christian speech must be kind. Filthy communication, Christian speech must be pure. And Christian speech must not lie not, it must be true. Those are the three replacements. Malice and wickedness. Malice, a vicious disposition, inward. Wickedness, planaria, from which we get our word pornography, the evil deeds that come from a vicious disposition. contrast these with sincerity and truth. A malice is evil disposition. Wickedness is bad deeds. Sincerity is a good disposition, and truth are good deeds. Therefore, brethren, let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And we keep that in our minds as we approach this memorial season.